between your 20s and your 40s, make sure that you're in the right job, that you're learning, you work for the right people, that you're growing, you're developing, and not just chase job titles or paychecks. And he's so right. In fact, I probably made more money in the last 5 years than I did in the 25 years before that.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. My name is Agi. I'm the CEO and founder of Tonkin. And today I have the pleasure of hosting MVK, the CPO of Coupa. Hey, man. Good to finally meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Obviously, Tonkin is a trusted partner of Coupa. And yeah, always happy to support our community. And I look forward to having a conversation.
Awesome. There's a lot we can learn from you. You're the CPO of Coupa and you're a board of advisor of SIG, which is a massive community for procurement. And you've done that for decades. So maybe we start there. Can you give the high level of how you ended up in procurement, a bit about your current role?
Yeah, for sure. So my background is finance. I started in accounting over 20 years ago at Arthur Andersen. I did some fun things in finance, some consulting work and some shared service center setups and stuff like that. At Foot Locker, I was the European controller, and I'm talking 20 years ago where we were implementing e-sourcing. I got really excited about running sourcing events, competitive pressure, have business impact while using your finance brain. That really went pretty well, and we saved a ton of money, and I got really excited about procurement and fact-based decision-making and competitive pressure and supporting your stakeholders and driving better business outcomes and things of that nature. And then at VF, was the first time that I actually got procurement in my job title, where I was given an opportunity to lead the setup, if you will, or support it, a procurement function. And VF is the parent for North Face and Vans and Timberland we acquired during my time in procurement there, and Lee and Wrangler and a bunch of other brands. And really starting to think about how do you leverage the power of the spend across all these brands. At VF, I then led a global transformation together with a bunch of people, of course, because it's never just me, and became a Coupa customer at VF. Then went to the same thing at Lululemon, at the time a $1.5 billion retailer that became a today $10 billion retailer that had very little procurement, no supply chain. And we really built that muscle and helped the company scale and grow. I became a Coupa customer there. And that ultimately led me to the company I currently work for, which is Coupa. So I came home, I sometimes say, and at Coupa, I am the proud chief procurement officer, where I do three things. One, of course, support the community, support our customers and our prospective customers with how do you drive transformative change? How do you optimize the investment in the platform? What operating model do you need? Or some ideas around that, and to do that globally. And of course, I get to support my awesome team at Coupa as well on the procurement side. And occasionally talk to our product people about the latest features and functions that are coming into our platform and what our customers are asking for. So yeah, it's been a remarkable journey. I've been very fortunate. And I've now lived in five different countries, and yeah, I'm quite consider myself a global citizen.
Nice. There's nothing more fun than working on a product that is for you, that you're the user of that product. Yeah. Marketing that are doing marketing for a marketing product, or engineers that work on a product for engineering and for you, the procurement. Oh, that's awesome. We definitely want to learn more or ask a little bit more about those big transformations. I think I saw a quote from you. You said at one point that if you don't have scars for procurement, you haven't pushed hard enough. You know, when you think about some of those, not all companies are created equal from a culture perspective. And sometimes it's much harder to push for transformation. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I say this a lot. And so some folks that are listening are going to say, oh, I've heard that before, which is true. But it also means that I mean it. And it's consistent, right? But what I think I've said is don't be afraid of scars. I'm not saying you should have scars. I'm just saying don't be afraid to have scars as you are in procurement. And the reason why I say that is often procurement is about change. And often procurement is about, hey, let's drive a competitive process, or let's look at requirements that the business believes that they need, and let's challenge that. Not for the sake of challenging, but procurement is all about providing the business with optionality and to drive decisions based upon facts and real data, and not because a certain supplier has been in my ecosystem for the past 15 years doing a really good job. And I'm not debating that. So we are about driving change, but we are also need to be very clear with our stakeholders. Procurement does not have the D of decision, right? I don't decide who a supplier is, but what is my responsibility is to make sure we extract the most amount of value out of the spend. And that could sometimes mean changing our business process. It could sometimes mean changing our supplier. It could also means changing both. It could mean changing our demand patterns. We need to maybe be much better and more accurate with our forecasting so that our suppliers know what we need in order to ensure business continuity. Or maybe we need to de-risk our supply chain and we need to have multiple suppliers rather than be single sourced. And if one thing, of course, came out of the last 5 years is a lot of companies were single sourced and they didn't even know it. Or maybe they were not single sourced, but their suppliers were single sourced. And so what I'm getting at is, if you are afraid to have those types of conversations with your stakeholders, and trust me, I've had great stakeholders. I've had stakeholders that, let's say in the beginning, were more challenging, but more than not, those relationships that were maybe a bit more bumpy in the beginning were actually the ones that, if you'd ask them today, say that procurement really drove so much value that it allowed them to accelerate objectives. And I can give you multiple examples in my career where I've had the fortune of that happening. But in the beginning, it's painful. And disruption is part of procurement. And if you're afraid of that, which could result in some scars, I don't think you should be in procurement.
Oh, I could not agree more. A lot of times people want the progress. They want the benefits of it, but they don't want to do the work of change. And it's all come hands in hand. And I could not agree more.
Or if I may just make one more point, or they think that procurement is just some kind of magic wand. I have been called a magician once in my career, and I've said this in other sessions and settings, but I have been called a magician because I can magically find savings. And my response to that was that I've done a terrible job explaining to you how hard procurement is. But it's hard. I love procurement, yeah? And I, for the rest of my remaining career, and I still have quite a few years ahead of me, I hope, I'd love that to be in procurement because I love procurement. It's the coolest profession, and I've said this many times, I said this 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that I do believe that procurement is the coolest job in the world. But yeah, I've been called a magician as well, which I think it's far from it.
It definitely feels, by the way, that procurement gets more spotlight in the last few years. I have my own analysis of why, but I'm curious to think, why do you agree with that statement? Why do you think that is?
Yeah, the short answer is it's because the board cares. And so when the board cares, the CEO cares. And when the CEO cares, the company cares, right? For the longest time, and again, I've been doing this for so long, and I know I have a lot of really strong procurement friends that would fundamentally agree with me, that we've been seeking that we need a seat at the table. And the progressive CPOs that I highly admire, and those listening know who they are, they never waited for a seat to be given. They would grab the seat and they didn't care if it was theirs or not. They always thought it was theirs, and I believe it was ours. But yeah, the short answer to your question is the board cares. Yeah. The last 5 years, the sky was not blue and the sun was not shining and there was disruption everywhere. It wasn't just COVID. It was Suez Canal. It is economic volatile times, interest rates, social unrest, the climate. There's been so many different things happening. Droughts in certain parts of the world, flooding in other parts of the world. And so it lets a lot of boards and CEOs and the C-suite realize that they didn't really know a whole lot about their supply chain and they didn't really know what procurement was doing. They just always knew that stuff would end up at the right place at the right time without maybe understanding how challenging that sometimes is. And I think it's just the focus. The top line growth is the other thing I'd say and answer is top line growth is much harder to get. It's much harder to grow your top line. At Coupa, we've always said a dollar saved is much more impactful than a dollar earned. And because it flows directly into your bottom line. In my prior jobs, I've always tried to convert savings into top line. What is the impact, right? How many black stretchy yoga pants did we have to sell at Lululemon to drive the same amount of impact to the bottom line operating income? That matters to people because people then start to switch on because otherwise just saving money is not maybe super interesting for most people. And I think it's the second thing is top line growth is harder and to drive shareholder value, you can still drive Op Inc. growth by looking at anything that goes from your sales all the way down to your operating income or EBITDA, depending on what metric you follow. And there's lots you can do there. And so I just think those two things are probably why procurement is getting so much more attention the last 5 years.
And I think the way you just described it too really aligns well with the previous point, right? Of it's not magic. It's about communicating the importance and working with the stakeholders. And we'll talk about technology for a second, because obviously you moved to Coupa, like you said, being what helped you to unlock a lot of it. But before we go there, maybe like another minute on, let's talk a little bit how you manage, how you lead, advice for folks too that are hearing what you're saying and they're like, man, I really want to be able to push that change. I don't know how to go about it. I don't know how to describe it. I think that tidbit on the top of the line, I think top growth, I think is very critical, right? Using what you bring, but trying to put it in the mind frame of the person you're trying to convince, right? I'm wondering from your experience, what are some tactical things that helped you?
The first thing is, if you're interviewing for a job, set some really clear expectations and don't just let that company interview you. But I always say I should interview the company. Why would I join you guys? Here's the maturity, 4 stages, and I can send it to any of your listeners. It's super simple. It's a one piece of paper. We've put it out. It's something you can download. What are the 4 stages of procurement maturity? And in an interview, say, okay, here's what I'm here to deliver. Here's what I'm going to do. And if this is what you want, then we should continue to talk. And I will tell you exactly what I expect from you and your organization. And I will be very clear on what the requirements are for us to go on this maturity journey. So what I often see is that people make the mistake in an interview and don't interview the company. They let the company interview me. And I'd say, before you start interviewing me and determining whether I'm the right fit for whatever it is, here's how I think about things. And here's what I've done in my past as well. And sometimes that works out and sometimes it doesn't. And that's okay. I'd rather know at the point of interview than after I've joined and I'm in the role for 6 months and you don't really want to drive transformative change. So that's one thing that has served me well, is be super clear and set right expectations. But if you're not in a situation where you're interviewing, you just want to progress, I would say, one, work on your elevator pitch. Don't go into any meeting and talk about savings. We still often lead with savings. Savings is an outcome. It's not our objective. I've never, ever in my entire procurement life said that procurement is my objective. It's an outcome. And it's not why I'm here. I'm here to optimize the value. And that is very different. Work on your elevator pitch with the CEO, or hey, what are you here to uniquely qualify? What are you uniquely qualified and positioned to do? So that's one other thing. But also, and that's maybe the most important thing, is ask for what you need. Don't ask for what you think you can get approved. I actually talked about it in another conversation earlier. But a lot of CPOs still have the tendency, not a lot, but there's quite a few out there that say, well, I know my tech landscape is suboptimal and I don't have the right amount of resources. And therefore, I'm just going to marginally improve. And I say, no, you should actually be bold and you should ask what you need. You can't expect me to win a Formula One race this season unless I have a Red Bull car. And I look at technology no different, but I also look at operating model and org structure no different. And so ask what you need. Otherwise, you can't hold me accountable for the outcomes. But be constructive, right? Have a plan and lay it out. Here's what I'm here to do over the next, whatever, 2-3 years. And here are some of the challenges that we have. And here's how we're going to solve them. And here's why the shareholder cares. And you should be able to talk to the CFO and the CEO and the head of ESG and the head of legal, the head of IT, and make it a very holistic conversation. I guarantee you people will care. If you're just going to talk to the CFO, he or she might go, yeah, that sounds interesting, but I've got 5 other priorities. The business is asking me for investments in whatever, and it's hard to prioritize. But if you create cross-functional appetite, the chances of success are just significantly larger. So that's probably the third one. I mean, I probably have another 5 or 6, but the key 3 are those that I just shared.
Yeah, no, I love it. And it goes back to that creating your own chair, right? You said earlier, instead of waiting for the chair to happen. Although I love it. Those are very, very practical.
And I'm happy to help any of your listeners. And I know what I'm saying, because I could set myself up for open up the floodgates, but I'm happy to help. And I'm happy to share how I've done that. And I'm not saying that's the way. It certainly is a way that worked really well for me.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at Tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
Let's move real quick to technology, right? Because a lot of the last 5 years, to your point, had a lot of major economic and global changes. But with it, and we'd be remiss not to mention AI too, but obviously the appetite for technology is how I think about, by the way, the biggest immediate tactical thing that the latest in AI did is not even yet the actual practical results from it, as much as it opened up the appetite, I feel, to everyone in every part of any business and organization to ask themselves, wait, do I actually need to do this thing manual, or is there a better way to do it? Do I have to think about it the old way, or maybe it's actually a time to look at how we do things? So obviously Coupa is a leader in the P2P space and the innovated that space as well a few years back, continue to innovate. But tell me a little bit more kind of how you think about technology role in this entire conversation, and talk specifically about Coupa or just in general about technology, but where's your head at when it comes to the innovation in the last few years as well?
Yeah, we can talk about this for hours, and so I'm going to try to be brief. I'd say I've always believed in the right blend between the right people, and we know this is basic, yeah, the right people, the right process, and the right technology. Often what I see when I talk to fellow practitioners, they do procurement at a pretty high level. They've got people that understand their commodities, they know how to drive a competitive process, they maybe do this in Excel and in emails, but they know how to negotiate. And they get involved at the right time. So when you think about operating models and you think about when do I get involved with the business, I'd say often people get involved at the right time. Where we always have struggled is how do I, once I've driven value upstream in source to contract, how do I execute against that contract? How do I make sure that my entire organization, wherever they are going to buy from the right suppliers that have gone through the right process with the right screening and the right whatever, anything what's important with your suppliers. And that's often where we failed, because we were stuck in the ERP, or we had 6-point solutions, one for sourcing, one for contracts, and then P2P would be done in the ERP. I would do payments somewhere else. I would manage risk in another platform. I would run analytics in Excel or whatever I was doing. And so that process has really become very manual, no single source of truth, and has always resulted in suboptimal outcomes, because either I'm chasing the business, making sure they buy from the right suppliers, or I was unable to support the business in a timely way because, yes, I had the contract, but nobody really knew how to buy against the contract. So that's where technology came from. And that's where Coupa came from. And I'm not here to sell Coupa. I think people need to do their own homework. They will ultimately make the right decision. But that's really where technology helps, is how do I connect all these different processes together and put it all under one roof? We always used to talk about the business spend management process. We now say it's total spend management because it's direct and indirect. We talk about the macro out there and what's going on in the world. And we just talked about that a little bit. And how can ultimately technology help me, what we call, become a margin multiplier? Now, what does that mean? That means that we have identified 5 distinct areas where technology can really help you. Now, whether that's around efficiency and productivity, how can people find things smarter, easier, with less friction, so they can get on their way and do whatever they love doing? For example, in a retail store, how can I make sure that all my employees in the store buy from the right suppliers and they can check in, check out, one place, one-stop shop, super, super critical, because what they want to do is service the guests that come into the stores. And that's around efficiency and productivity. And how can you multiply that by removing all of that disconnected process, and make it more seamless and easy? Sustainability, same thing. How do you do business with the right suppliers that have the right ESG and D&I substrates and that can help me with my carbon footprint reduction or whatever it is? Resiliency is another one, and I'll get to this really quickly. Resiliency, what do I know about my suppliers, and what happens if one supplier either goes bankrupt or fails to deliver? Do I have optionality in my supply chain? Super critical. Technology can help you with that. And the last thing is growth. We just said that top line growth is hard to come by, but with margins being thin and there's a low or no growth environment, what you can do is be better with the resources that you have, that you can reinvest into top line growth. And all these different elements are all going to help you, these 5 distinct areas, becoming a margin multiplier. And that's ultimately how we think about technology, is technology enables you to go from where you are operating today to where you could be operating. What's the art of possible? And that's how I think about technology. And we can talk about AI, and we can talk about machine learning and generative AI. And yes, they're all out there. But I fundamentally believe without a platform that connects all these processes together, single source of truth, and then have an AI that trains based upon that data set, which is exactly at the heart of the company I work for, that we've been doing for 10 plus years, aggregated spend data, anonymized, like we now have $7 trillion almost worth of spend in aggregation. That's what you want, so that AI is trained on reliable, structured, governed data. I think that's where technology should be. It should be easy. It should be seamless, fun to use, user-friendly, high level of adoption. And if you think like that, then I think you're on the right path.
And I think one question that comes up a lot is, technology is obviously, and I think everyone will agree with it, it is a force multiplier, right? That's literally the definition of why you would ever bring any technology. From your experience, and we can finish with that, but from your experience, when is the right time to bring technology or make technology changes? Some people would bring technology first and then trying to figure out their process. Some people will go too far with trying to define the process before. There's obviously a dance between those two. From your perspective or experience, any kind of tips on how to think about that?
It's a very tough question to answer, because I would say there's always a good time, but that's maybe too simplistic to think about it. Look, if you deploy technology and you don't think about your underlying business process, and you don't think about change and how to optimize the investment in whatever technology it is, whether it's what we deliver, or it's your ERP, or it's an CRM, or it's HCM, or WMS, and I've done all of those things at some point in my career, or at least been involved and been part of. If you don't realize that there is a level of change required to maximize the potential of the technology that you're acquiring, you're going to drive suboptimal outcomes. And often what companies then do is they blame the technology. So in general, I'd say there's never a bad time. You know, I'd say there's always a good time to look at technology, and especially today. And I'm still amazed sometimes to hear what the tech landscape some of these really large organizations have and how hard they find it to give true transparency in their spending. There's always a right time, but you have to do those things in tandem. So think about technology as an enabler. We're not the one sole solve all, or, you know, like just throw in technology and we've been doing this for so long.
Silver bullet, yeah.
There is no such thing, but you do need to think about buying the right technology that is scalable, that has the right architecture, that has the right future feature function development, that invests in R&D, that is easy and seamless, is the time to value is fast. Don't think about technology as sticker. You're not buying a car. You're not buying feature functions, because a car all have four wheels. And how do you distinguish cars? Well, it becomes often like a more popularity contest. Technology should be the complete opposite of buying a car, right? You should really think about end to end, and you should think about R&D and investment and architecture and scalability. And all those things are much more important than the price you pay, because the price is what you pay and the value is what you're going to get. And so, yeah, I know I'm rambling a tiny bit, but I just think it's so important that we buy technology not as if we were to buy a commodity or a laptop or whatever. It's not just a basic RFP. You know, you really need to understand your business and then make sure that you pick the right technology. And this goes across any technology you buy. It's not just for the technology we provide. Is if you don't understand what business challenges you have and how technology is going to solve them, don't start. Honestly, it's a recipe for disaster.
By the way, I love this. I love the car analogy. It is explained so well, part of the problem, right? That a lot of companies and individuals experience when they buy technology, they think about it as they're buying. And by the way, they're not to blame. The SaaS of the last 10 years, the entire marketing was like, everything is plug and play. You just buy it off the shelf. The industry was trying to make software feels like commodities. Where in reality, I could not agree with you more, it is an investment. And when you make an investment, you need to understand what is it that you're trying to achieve. And again, I love the way you phrased it, maximize, like how do you maximize the potential of that investment, and understanding that there's a clear problem you're trying to solve And to do that, you need to make changes and you need something that can fit your need, or not only now, but also in the future. Very different than, I just need a toothbrush that I would cast away later to buy a different toothbrush. That doesn't work like that.
Yeah, what you often see companies do is they think about it as a band-aid. Oh, I've got a problem. If I talk about my profession, I got a problem in sourcing, or I got a problem in analytics. So let me throw another 20 grand at the problem and another 50 grand here and another 75,000. Or let me go and invest in my suboptimal software and throw another bunch of consultants at it. You see a lot of these really large organizations, but also mid-market and corporate company. They're like, let me just do something quick. And then they realize after a year and a half, I've just spent another 250 grand on a bunch of consultants, and I have a customized solution that is not scalable. And now I'm stuck for 2-3 years because I didn't have the vision of where am I going and how do I ensure I've got the right supplier, which ultimately software is a supplier. And you do the same thing for commodities that you're buying. I bought so many different things in my career that you always didn't think about, what is my requirements today, but is this organization able to scale with me? Is this organization able to grow with me? Different geographical areas. Maybe I want to go not just P2P, but I want to go source to pay, or I want to manage risk. I want to manage whatever. Or do I now have to infuse another supplier? I mean, you would never do that for commodities, right? Where you buy a supplier just for today. No, you look at the scalability. And why are we not doing that with software? I just don't understand that.
Yeah.
I'm generalizing. Yeah, there's a ton of people out there that totally get it. 3,500 of them are Coupa customers. But I'm just saying, just make sure you think about where you're heading and what you're trying to solve for.
Yeah, absolutely. This was great. Maybe as we wrap up, I'd like to ask, any advice that you had in your career? And you gave a lot of advices today, but on a personal level, any advice you got in your career that you're saying this is worth paying that forward and really helped you?
Yeah, look, I've been very blessed and fortunate in my career. I don't believe careers are built in isolation. It requires lots of people that have believed in myself and a support center that I have at home, of course, as well. But I've been very lucky. I consider myself very fortunate to be in the situation I'm in. I love the company I work for. So what else can you want when you're kind of mid-career? I still like to think myself to be mid-career. Maybe I'm at the end of the over the hump, but whatever. But I've been very lucky.
Like second half of your career.
Yeah, I'm in second half. Yeah, the second half, like that. But there's two things that have always stood out for me. And I've had great leaders, and I've had leaders that I thought had some room for improvement, and you learn from both. The two things that I've learned the most from is, the first one is, you'll make more money between your 40th and your 50th than your 20th and your 40th. And that was a comment from Tom Lowe, who was at the time my CFO at Sterling Commerce. So I also want to quote who it was, because I think it's important. He's an excellent leader. Learned a ton from him in 2 years and change. And what he meant with that was, between your 20th and your 40th, make sure that you're in the right job, that you're learning, you work for the right people, that you're growing, you're developing, and not just chase job titles or paychecks. And he's so right. In fact, I probably made more money in the last 5 years than I did in the 25 years before that. So I just want to, and it's not that, but it's not, I also don't want this to be taken out of context, but it's so true. And so I just want to say, that's my first thing, is you'll make more money later on in your career. So make sure earlier on in your career, you make the right choices, calculated risks, sometimes do stuff that you like, am I ready for it? 70% you're ready, 30% maybe you're not, or 50-50, whatever. So take some calculated risk, but be smart about building your career and building your reputation. The second thing is, build your network. And I cannot stress this enough, especially to those that are just starting. Start building a network when you don't need it, so when you do need it, you have it. And a lot of people are working in their career and they're crushing it. They're doing all sorts of amazing stuff. And then maybe they're in a situation where they're impacted by whatever, something they can't control. Maybe you get a new boss, he doesn't like you, whatever. It can happen to all of us. If you don't have a network and people don't know who you are, then it's going to be very hard for you to progress in your career. And I've always believed in a network, but I've also believed in building my own reputation, so that it's not just the company I work for and internally they know, Michael is driving some value and is a good stakeholder and whatever, but also that externally people know. And how do you do that? First of all, LinkedIn is free, super easy to use. I'm not here to advertise LinkedIn, but I'm a big fan. There's not that many alternatives anyway. But my point is, build your network and your reputation. You can do through LinkedIn as well. see if you can do a webinar or do something like this that people might go, huh, that's interesting. I never heard about this guy. Maybe I should follow him. And I'm not saying I have a ton of interesting stuff to say. I'm just saying build your brand so that people know who you are, what you stand for, what you've accomplished, and be willing to talk about it externally. Otherwise, no one else. So those are the things that I want to share with your listeners that I think are critical for you. At least they've worked really well for me.
Oh, perfect. That's super useful. I love it. If anyone wants to learn more from you and nerd about those things, you mentioned LinkedIn. I'm assuming that's where they find you.
LinkedIn is the easiest. You can send me a message. I do try to respond, even if I say I don't have time. But yeah, I mean, if you do really want to connect and have a serious conversation, make sure you're thoughtful. But if you email me at mvk@coupa.com, I promise you I will reply.
Perfect. Thank you so much, man. That was great. And thank you for joining me today.
Yes, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it too. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on all things business operations, join the Tonkin community at tonkin.com/community.